defending our safety might mean taking away our liberty. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy, and along with me today, as usual, is my Vice Chairman, co-host, good friend, fellow analyst, and all-around great guy, Chuck Michaels.
Yes, hello, Barry, how are you? And I have a quote that I'm going to share with the people today that goes right along with our topic.
Excellent.
And it's from Benjamin Franklin in 1759. And he said, "Those who would trade precious liberty for a little temporary security deserve neither liberty nor security." And
yes,
that's what we're going to be talking about today.
That's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is a very, very germane topic that we're going to be discussing today. So pay very particular attention, because we're going to be asking you to get involved as soon as you possibly can. What we're talking about is a piece of legislation that our United States Congress, specifically the United States Senate, is looking at right now. It is called the National Defense Authorization Act. Sounds good, doesn't it? Yes, that's Senate number 1867, Senate Bill 1867. This bill is basically a spending continuation bill for basically brick and mortar purposes for the Defense Department. But this bill, which passed in a House version back in May of this year, has now raised quite a number of questions from a number of people who have now actually had the time since the bill was passed by the House in May. And folks, as we know, as Nancy Pelosi has said, we don't have time to read the bills, just pass them and then find out what's in them later. Well, thankfully, this bill didn't get moving at the same time in the Senate, so people did have a chance to start reading this piece of legislation, only to find out that the National Defense Authorization Act is an attack on our fundamental individual liberties as American citizens. And Chuck, you've been doing some research on this, so I'm going to let you kind of take it away from here. The key thing for our listeners is we're going to ask them to contact their United States Senate member. And in Ohio, that would be Senator Rob Portman and Senator Sherrod Brown. And I don't care what your political affiliation is, as you're listening to this program, I want you to contact them both. One's a Republican, the other's a Democrat. But you need to get on the phone with them, even yet this evening, and maybe by tomorrow at the latest, and ask them to not support the National Defense Authorization Act in its current form. And Chuck's going to explain to you why. Chuck, take it away.
Well, this bill is an absolute monstrosity. If you were trying to find something that would dismantle the vast majority of protections you have in the Bill of Rights, this is a law that would do it. Now, what's interesting about that is in the past, people have done things that they knew were unconstitutional with the hopes that the Supreme Court would at some point sort things out. Folks, that's no way to run a railroad. You don't pass or sign bills that you think portions of may be unconstitutional with the hopes that the court will strike down this piece or that piece.
Just to throw in there, isn't that what George Bush did with the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Act? He stated specifically he knew it was unconstitutional, but he was going to sign it into law anyway because he knew the courts would strike it down, which, of course, we found out later on that the courts didn't. They upheld it.
Well, parts of it. It has been falling apart piecemeal, little by little. But
finally, as people have spent a lot of time, energy, and their resources in attacking provisions of a bill that never should have been passed in the first place.
Exactly, and that's it. And it's interesting you bring up Senator John McCain, because once again, we have Senator John McCain, who apparently has never read the Constitution. I don't know that for sure, but I can't imagine that anybody that had read it would have been involved in the legislative efforts he's been involved in. John McCain is the co-author of this abomination, mm-hmm. along with Carl Levin, the most screamingly liberal senator that you can imagine. Carl Levin also has obviously never read the Constitution. I believe he was a constitutional lawyer, and that usually is not a good sign. Constitutional attorneys have rarely read the Constitution and virtually never obey it. And basically what happened is that Carl Levin and John McCain got together in secret and crafted this bill that they attached to this NDAA bill. And one of the main problems here, again, the ACLU has done yeoman's work. I've said in the past, when I find myself agreeing with the ACLU, I generally have a problem with that. But in this case, I'll say welcome to the fight, guys, because they're doing yeoman's work and exposing this stuff. This abomination of a bill passed 322-96 in the House. It doesn't matter who sits in the speaker's well. Nancy Pelosi, John Boehner, nobody knew who what was in this bill when they passed this in the House. Hence, every Republican in the place, all but five Republicans voted for this thing. And I know two of them. One of them was Ron Paul, and one of them was a congressman from Michigan named Justin Amash. He was from the Grand Rapids area.
Right, and just for clarification, there are two of the five who voted against bill in its House issue. Now, in the Senate, though, Senate 1867, Chuck, actually, it's live. They were on the floor of the Senate on Tuesday afternoon debating this and adding amendments to it. It's already been marked up through committee. And they're actually in floor debate now, and I believe they motioned and had cloture, so they're ready to go on full debate. And that actually started on Tuesday of this week. Immediately, there was a major clash on the Senate floor between two Republican senators.
Yes, in fact, it was John McCain, the author of this abomination, and Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky.
My question would be, under the provisions, would it be possible that an American citizen then could be declared an enemy combatant and sent to Guantanamo Bay and detained indefinitely?
I think that as long as that individual, no matter who they are, if they pose a threat to the security of the United States of America, should not be allowed to continue that threat. And I think that's the majority of American public opinion, especially in light of the facts that I continue to repeat to the senator from Kentucky. 27% of detainees who were released got back in the fight and were responsible for the deaths of Americans. We need to take every step necessary to prevent that from happening. That's for the safety and security of the men and women who are out there putting their lives on the line in our armed services. Mr. President, I suggest the absence of a quorum.
John McCain launched into a giant red herring response in which he said, yes, and they need to be, because as we know that 27% of the detainees who have been let go from places like Guantanamo have gone back into the field and gone back into being combatants. Okay, 27%. What does that mean for the other 73%? Were they detained improperly? Did they just simply give it up and decide not to risk it again and go home? Nobody knows. And that's a really kind of a nonsensical response, because a United States citizen is not necessarily a combatant. And if he is, if he is a combatant, then he's guilty of treason. So my question is, why aren't we using a constitutional methodology of detaining these citizens of a treason trial?
Let me answer that question for you, Chuck, because this extends John McCain's comments. This is another thing that he said in response to that question. He said, an individual, no matter who they are, if they pose a threat to the security of the United States of America, should not be allowed to continue that threat. And he said, we need to take every step necessary to prevent that from happening. That's for the safety and security of the men and women who are out there risking their lives in our armed services. Okay, I know that we were talking about some things that are happening on foreign shores and things of that nature, but basically, this bill goes a lot deeper than that, now doesn't it?
Oh, it goes a lot deeper than that, because it also basically negates what's known as the Posse Comitatus Act.
Explain for our listeners a little bit of the history of the Posse Comitatus.
Okay, the Posse Comitatus Act was written as a response to some of the things that had gone on in the South during Reconstruction and the occupation of the South, wherein there were just terrible abuses. United States soldiers who were acting as a federal police force of occupation in the South after the war between the states. Essentially, this went on from about 1867 until 1876 or 1877. And in 1878, the Posse Comitatus Act was written that basically says the United States Army or any arm of the military cannot be used as a police force within the borders of the United States.
We see, and that's the key right there, Chuck, and that's where you wanted to bring this up. Because this bill doesn't just affect maybe an American citizen who's over in a combat zone and who decides to turn traitor. And there's a section in this bill, and I'll let you discuss it, that would specifically repeal the Posse Comitatus Act and allow the United States military to be used as law enforcement against American citizens on American soil.
It's very interesting about this because Joe Biden has been trying to get this thing passed when he was in the Senate for years. He's wanted to use the military as what amounts to an occupation force. And all you have to do to see what some of the abuses that could happen is look at some of the things that went on in New Orleans during the Katrina thing. Basically, United States soldiers running around confiscating trucks and confiscating rifles, confiscating pistols, all kinds of things that people were using to protect themselves and to make sure that they can continue to survive. And the United States, under the auspices of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that's also FEMA, were going around acting as FEMA's police arm, confiscating these things, detaining individuals, basically anybody who was deemed a quote-unquote troublemaker, in other words, someone who was fending for themselves and not allowing themselves to be treated as a subject rather than a citizen, was being detained by these National Guard troops who were actually federalized at the time. They were in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. All you have to do also to see where the Posse Comitatus Act, one of the reasons it was written, is look at Waco. It was a complete abuse of the law that Janet Reno was allowed to call out tanks and military units from Fort Hood to engage in a raid on this compound. No matter what you think of the Branch Davidians, the fact is that what went on there was blatantly unconstitutionally and blatantly in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act.
You know, Chuck, that brings up another good point. I think I want to stop for a second and tell our listeners, before you think that possibly we're trying to be unpatriotic and that we don't want to see America defended, let me clarify something for you. Patriotism is a love of one's country and its institutions that are in line with our basic charters, which is the Bible to start with, and the United States Constitution. It's not patriotic to blindly allow our elected leaders to throw off the restrictions on their authority under the Constitution in order for them to create for themselves a temporary means of achieving a finite goal. So, as we've said before, there are only three real areas where the federal government should be involved. Now, one's defense, the other one's diplomacy, and the other one's trade. And this is defense, so defense authorization. We're not necessarily opposed to the authorization of spending for true defense of our country, but this expansion and eradication of constitutional protections for your and my individual liberties that are guaranteed to us by this Constitution and by our charters, that is the thing that we're saying must be stopped.
And that's the real bottom line here, is the fact that what we're saying is there's nothing going on in the United States right now, or in fact is even actually imaginable, that would require individuals to surrender their personal rights as a matter of defense of the nation.
This isn't Red Dawn, where we've got Soviets parachuting into America to take it over.
And the only reason there may be terrorists on our soil, most of them are imports, folks. A lot of them are here, maybe came over as supposedly under the auspices of something legal, but have stayed way past their welcome. And the idea that we are now handing out amnesty for people who have been here illegally for a long time, just because their families have been here for a long time and they may now be law-abiding citizens, quote-unquote. I mean, let's face it, the 9/11 attacks were carried out by people who came here on student visas and hadn't attended a class in months. They were here illegally, and the Department of Immigration and Naturalization did not do its job.
No, it did not. But our current Senator John McCain and others, their only response to this is the addition of, and it's Section 1031 for listeners. If you're going to call the Senate and complain, it's a provision in Section 1031 of the bill that basically would repeal the Posse Comitatus Act and authorize the United States military to be able to detain citizens on American soil. That means that a tank could roll up to your driveway and armed troops could come out, surround your home, and put you under arrest, and you have no recourse if this bill would pass. As a matter of fact, you wouldn't even have the rights to contact an attorney to defend yourself. And we're going to talk about that little provision tomorrow, aren't we, Chuck?
Yes, we are. Now, I'm going to give everybody the Capitol switchboard number. Listen closely, and I'll repeat it twice. It's area code 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. We're asking you to contact your senator and oppose Senate Bill 1867. You need to do it today because, unfortunately, one of the most important amendments to that bill has already failed, so it needs to go down to defeat. This is a bad bill. This is a bill that will take away your rights. Be with us tomorrow at 5:30, and we will continue our discussion.